I want to invite you now to stand for our gospel reading, and also want to invite you to close your eyes and enter into this rather supernatural, amazing event. Thank you, Paula.
The gospel is taken from St. Mark, chapter 9, beginning at verse 2, the transfiguration. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Then a cloud appeared and covered them, and a voice came from the cloud, "This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen. Glory to you, O Lord.
Loving God, help us through Jesus to be open to new experiences of you and your love, new insights of your greatness, and so we might know you a little more day by day. Amen. Do please be seated. So, Mark's Gospel. There's one question that Mark's Gospel wants the readers to ask again and again. Who is this man? Because the people had been waiting for the return of God's presence to the temple, and they'd got an expectation what he was going to look like. God's Messiah, agent of deliverance, the one who will kick out the Romans. But is Jesus the one, or someone else? I think it's the Matrix that I always go back to. Are you the one? Just remember the Matrix when you think of Mark's Gospel. But it also shows us how the Jesus friends and the process they go through to come to understand the identity of Jesus. And we see their gradual change of mindset during the journey with Jesus from Galilee to Jerusalem, through crucifixion to resurrection and beyond. They misunderstand Jesus and misrepresent him, just as we do from time to time. But they gradually realize that their concept of the Messiah needs to change. A process everyone needs to go through, as we have in set ideas in our mind that may not be right. So by the time they go up with Jesus up this mountain, they're puzzled and they're puzzling about who he is. And then this happens, that he's transfigured before their eyes. And he seems to be accompanied by Moses and Elijah, great prophets and leaders of God's people of old. But they are seen talking with Jesus, who is then affirmed by the voice of God. It's like God's trying another way to enlighten them. Maybe he thinks they've been a bit slow. But he's putting Jesus in this elevated company and showing how Jesus completes what Moses and Elijah both prefigured. Moses led the people out of Egypt in the captivity and into the promised land with a desert in between. And so Jesus will lead his people from captivity to the world and its ways to their true freedom. Our 2 Corinthians that Graham read today deals with how the gospel is veiled. There's so much I'd love to say about the veil in the Bible, but I'm not going to. You'll be pleased to hear. Surely now, at the top of this mountain, this is a moment of peeking through the veil, seeing a glimpse of God's big story. And again, God's voice is heard as it was when Jesus was baptized. This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him. And then in verse 9, after it's all happened, Jesus tells them not to speak of this event until he has risen from the dead. Now, they would have assumed that all righteous people would be raised on the last day. But Jesus has just suggested that he will be raised before them and in their lifetimes. So they're not only having to review the concept of who the Messiah is, but the concept of resurrection as well. I want to help us imagine being on the mountain that day by reading a reflection by Nick Fawcett, which is written through the eyes of Peter. I wanted to hold on to that moment forever, to keep things just as they were for the rest of eternity, for I feared that life would never be this special again. It was just the four of us. Well, six if you count Moses and Elijah, but I'm not sure you can do that. The four of us shared a blessed moment of peace and quiet. No crowds pleading for a miracle. No lepers begging for healing. No Pharisees baying for his blood. No Sadducees spoiling for a fight. Just us, together, as we'd all too rarely been. And we knew it couldn't last. He made that perfectly clear when I dared to suggest otherwise. There was trouble round the corner, his enemies waiting to pounce, and he knew it was only a matter of time before they got him. Not much of a prospect, was it? Rejection, suffering, death. I don't know how he stuck it. I really don't. But he didn't want to think about such things, not then anyway. And up there on the mountain, it seemed a million miles away, out of sight, out of mind. So can you blame me for wanting to stay, for wanting to hang on to that moment for as long as possible? Only I couldn't, of course. You can't stop the clock, can you? And make the world stand still. Life goes on, as they say, and you have to go with it, like it or not. It was hard to accept that, hard to go back to the daily round with its familiar demands and expectations. Yet as I spoke to Jesus coming down the mountain, I realized suddenly it had to be. There was no other way. No going back, I mean. Without that, there would have been no point, those sacred moments, an empty illusion. And he knew that. And slowly, very slowly, I came to know that too. This had been a vital time, a special time, and one that gave him new strength, new resolve. The inspiration he needed to face the future and fulfill his destiny. But it was as much for us as it was for him. A moment we could look back on so that afterwards we might keep looking forwards. the disciples then had had a glimpse of God's bigger picture and had to hold on to their unanswered questions as they were to journey with Christ to the cross. We will have, we should have, in fact, always have unanswered questions if our own faith is not to stand still and become stale, enshrined in some bygone era or experience. It's our questions and our readiness to ask questions that helps our faith to grow and change and develop. So today, the last Sunday before Lent, let's use Lent to ask questions of God, of one another, and to grow our faith. And so I repeat that prayer. Loving God, help us through Jesus Christ to be open to new experiences of your love and new insights into your greatness, so that we may know you a little more, day by day. Amen.